Live from the 607, it is the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking sports locally and nationally. Why don't you join in the conversation with the hashtag ODPH? Here we go. Welcome to another edition of the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, hashtag ODPH. I am your host, Ken M, and sitting across from me this week is the sound guy galore, JR.
Oh, you know I'm right here.
And to the right of me, checking the cell phone for the stats you need to know, it's the intern himself, Padawan J.
Hello, hello, hello.
Folks, we have a lot to talk about, so let's not waste any time. JR, what's the big football story of the week?
Nothing. There is no football. My Sunday was ruined. I didn't know what to do. There wasn't a Super Bowl. There was no Pro Bowl. There was no game. Pat, I'm miserable.
Say, big story, I think a lot of players sitting beachside in the Caribbean, Hawaii, or various other exotic places.
No football whatsoever. Miserable.
It's a
what
sad,
are we going to do?
It's a sad day in Mudville because the NFL is on hiatus now until the draft. But there are other sports going on. Namely, the NBA is taking full front and center attention of the sports world right now. And dare I say, is Cleveland actually okay?
For me, the jury's still out.
I think the jury is still out, but if their game against Boston is any indication, things will be all right. Because Cleveland decided to make a statement win against the Celts at home. I believe it was on Paul Pierce Day, too.
Yes, it was. Paul Pierce's number was, of course, retired and lifted up into the rafters.
Yeah, and LeBron and company decided to spoil the party. Pad, you got the stats on that?
Yeah, so the final score was Cleveland 121, Boston 99, LeBron James 24 points, new players George Hill 12 points, and then on the Boston side of things, you had Morris with 17 points, Kyrie had 18, Jason Tatum had 9, Al Horford had 9. So, all in all, not a great performance from Boston, but for me, it's kind of a blip on the radar. You know, jury's still out. I really don't know if Cleveland's all right or not.
I think the jury is still out, definitely, but with Clarkson for Cleveland putting up 17, Hill with 12, Hood with 15, you definitely got to look at it and say, you know what, maybe people writing Cleveland off a little too early. But I don't agree with everybody saying they're a lock for the finals.
No.
I think that's a little too premature with this team. I want to see a few more games with them and see where they go, if they're really going to gel and be that force in the East that they need to be. Because I think with Boston, I'm not going to say Boston took them too lightly. Maybe it was just probably an off night.
Yeah.
But can Cleveland, with this team, win a best of seven against Boston?
Well, and you got to figure it was an off night for Boston, and then they were, you know, quote unquote, use a football term, game planning for one lineup, and then all of a sudden, it's turned on our head, and all of a sudden, half these players we were game planning against aren't here anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good question to ask. JR, you got any thoughts on this?
You know, I'm not worried about. So they're 2-0 since the fire sale.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight, as we record, they have to play OKC.
Yep. Yeah.
That's more what I'm concerned about.
In OKC.
I want to see him play somebody in the West. Because I'm sorry, the Heat, you pummel. Okay, so, you know, granted, they're going to play the Heat again. You pummel them. Okay, yeah, whatever. Anybody in the East, I'm not really concerned about right now. Your ultimate test is anybody in the West.
I agree
with
that.
Can you get the Spurs? You know, if you wouldn't make a statement win against the Spurs, OKC tonight on the road, Golden State, of course. Okay, now you may be convinced that, you know, this team actually might work and have some faith. But I'm sorry. Against anybody else, I'm not really that impressed.
No, I mean,
I'm really not. I mean, the Boston thing, like you said, like Pat said, you plan for how this team looks, and it's completely different when they get to Boston. Okay, you have a bad shooting night. Maybe you're not taking the game all that seriously, so on and so forth. And then, you know, like I said, I want to see him play somebody competitive in the West versus just Boston in the East.
First game with the new team, they played the Atlanta Hawks, who are 17-39. They beat them 123-107. It's the Atlanta Hawks. They're not exactly the Golden State Warriors going to the finals here.
Right, and I think that's one thing we're really trying to stress with that is Atlanta is not exactly a force to be reckoned with. And Boston, who a lot of people, including myself, have thought, okay, pencil them in for the finals in the East, Cleveland did make a statement win. I'd like to see what happens the next time they go around with them.
Which isn't that far away, if I'm looking.
Yeah,
at
I was going
to
say it's
right.
Coming up quicker than I think we all think. But to further the point, though, I do want to see what they have against the West, the elite of the West, Because I think your OKCs, your Golden States, your Houstons, and your San Antonios. I mean, that's the four teams you got to kind of put the benchmark with. If tonight, as we said, we were taping and Cleveland is going to Oklahoma City, if the game is close and let's say Cleveland loses by two, is it still a sign that they can hang with the West? Or is it one, well, you know, everybody jumped to conclusions too early? I'll pose that to the panel.
I think it's just wait and see. It's because, you know, you think back to when LeBron went to Miami and South Beach and teamed up with Wade and Bosch, how long it took them to gel together. They had their good nights. They had their bad nights. I think looking back at the Boston game, Boston might have taken them too lightly because, you know, everyone outside of the city of Cleveland and its fan base was, oh, my gosh, fire sale. They're tanking. They're giving up. Dan Gilbert's trying to sabotage LeBron's season. I think Boston might have taken them a little bit lightly, if that's kind of the way I want to look at it. Yeah, took them too lightly.
Jay?
You know, with the Paul Pierce retirement number, the big celebration, they get caught up in the moment. I really don't think they cared that much about the Cavs. Like this game, I mean, I know they're close with Toronto for the one seed, but they're not really worried about this game right now. They're more with the Paul Pierce celebration. I don't care about anybody in the East. That I don't care because I mean, let's think about it. You're gonna get your Wizards in a matchup. Miami's gonna possibly sneak. You know, Miami's gonna be there, so maybe you have to play Miami, and then you know, ultimately either Boston or Toronto, you have to play for the Eastern title. But again, I don't have any doubts that they could probably get through there. It's the West that I'm concerned about because if you get to the finals, are you just going to get blown out? Like tonight, like example, if they get blown out tonight by like 30, that right there tells you they're really in trouble. They're going to get to make it to the finals of the Eastern Conference, sure, but then are they just going to get steamrolled by a veteran team out of the West? Because, I mean, we all know how competitive the West is. So
That's going to be the point question. I mean, personally, I think if they can keep it, if they lose within two, or yeah, I'll even say four, I think that's a good loss. If there is such a thing, if Cleveland can hang with them and look competitive against one of the elite teams in the West, I think that's a good sign. I'm not ready to pencil them back in the finals by any means.
No.
I definitely want to see more out of them. I know I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, the Cavs are back and everything's great. It's still in the honeymoon phase of this.
So you're counting your eggs before they hatch.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really sit there confidently and go, you know what, you're right. They're going to beat Boston. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think so at this moment. Now, I'm not saying after I see him play a few more times, am I going to change my opinion. But if you ask me right now, I still think the East belongs to Boston. And I want to see what Cleveland does to adjust. Now, they have gotten younger. They've gotten more athletic. They're definitely are looking and they're going in the right direction. They need to maintain this, though.
Yeah.
And I think that if they do have a stretch coming against the elite of the West, that's where the benchmark is going to be. And I think if they can go to Oklahoma City and beat Oklahoma City, and I'm not saying they're going to blow them out, but if they do, I think that's a big statement. But I think if they get a win down there, I think it's a good win, obviously. And I think if they can keep it within, if they lose by four, I think that's a good loss, if there is such a thing as a good loss. But I think it's a temperature in the room for the Cavs of where they rank.
Yeah, looking at their next five games after they play Oklahoma City, they play Washington at home. They go to Memphis. They have the Spurs come to Cleveland. The Nets come to Cleveland, and then the 76ers come to Cleveland.
Well, I think when the Spurs come, that's going to be the real next challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, when everybody talks about them going right straight to the finals, either way when you think about this, when I think of the finals, you're thinking either one of two things. You're thinking of a lineup of Curry, Thompson, Durant, Green, or you're going to get Gordon, Paul, Harden, and Ryan Anderson.
Yeah.
Versus LeBron in fill in the blank as far as this fire sale is concerned. So either way, I mean, they're going to have to really prove something to me tonight, even against OKC.
Yeah. You know,
are they really going to be able to stop them in OKC? It's going to be a good test. But, again, I still think those four, I mean, when you think Houston – and Golden State, I'm like, man, like they're just the way those two teams are gelled. Those two teams in the West are right now. I don't know if this team in Cleveland's really got it. Like, sure, if it's a lock, they're going to get to the final, sure. But then are they just going to get blown out? Because it's kind of the feeling I still have with this team.
Yeah, and that's a fair statement.
They may get a win at home, like a game three or a game four or something, and then just get run over in the finals in game five on the road. But
well, funny you should mention playoffs. I'm looking at the conference standings as they are when we record. Cleveland is currently the number three seed. Number six seed, Indiana Pacers. Lance Stephenson.
Well, you know, and that should be an easy win for Cleveland. I mean, I think so at least. And I don't see Indiana really giving that serious of a threat. Albeit, Stephenson will probably do something to get on LeBron's nerves, and LeBron will go off.
He usually does.
Yeah, he'll go off for some points.
He usually does.
But I think we're going to have to wait and see. And obviously, if they make a deep run with this squad in Cleveland, is that enough to keep LeBron there? That's going to be another story to tell in the offseason. I know a lot of people are saying, oh, he's definitely bound for the West, and we said it last week, and I'll say it again.
It's like we've said it multiple times.
Yeah, he's not going out West to L.A. If anywhere, he's going to Houston or San Antonio if he wants to. But if this team makes a deep run, and let's say they push a game seven in the finals, just hypothetically throwing it out there.
Sure.
Does he leave then? I don't think so.
I think it depends on a couple of factors. I think it depends on how good the team looks, the sales pitch the Cavaliers will have to give to him. Because I think given how this season is going, I think he might be having some deja vu of years past where it's, you know, essentially a one. And I know I said this last week, it's a one-man show. It's LeBron and everybody else around him kind of helping out.
But if the offense is running through him, and let's say he starts getting some more consistency out of his new players. I'm not saying they're going to drop 40 a night. I don't think that's expected. But let's say if they drop anywhere between 15 to 20.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enough to balance the team out?
Maybe.
I'd say that's a solid maybe. And is that enough to keep them? I don't know. But I will say that Cleveland at this stage has made a decent win streak happen that is bringing the idea to conversation.
Yeah, you can entertain the idea.
Yeah, that maybe the ship is still afloat. But as we've said, I think you're going to have to wait to see how he plays against the elite of the West and see how bad they lose if they lose or how big they win if they win. That is going to be your true testament. Let us know what you think. Hit us up on the hashtag ODPH. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Brian Wolf from Fair City Fire. You are listening to ODPH, the greatest podcast in Binghamton.
Woo!
Coming back for the second segment on this week's ODPH, and we got to talk a little UFC action this weekend. There was a middleweight fight for an interim title, but man, did that ever get messy in a hurry. Yoel Romero was fighting Luke Rockhold, and Yoel unfortunately did not make weight. He was 2.5 pounds over, if I read correctly.
Yeah.
So going into the fight, if you showed up overweight, obviously you're not eligible to win the belt if you do win the fight. If Rockhold had won, he was going to win the belt, and then that would obviously have set up Rockhold versus Whitaker. But Romero pulled out the third round knockout, and obviously there is now some confusion of what is going to be next in the middleweight division. Because Romero, I mean, obviously did win the fight, so is that mean that he is a lock for fighting Whitaker again? Or is somebody else due to fight? And I'll pose it to the panel. Your thoughts on that?
I don't think you can give Romero a title shot. Yes, I know he won. Yes, I know he beat Rockhold. But to me, it just doesn't sit with me. Now, it doesn't completely upset me. I'm not, you know, throwing papers up in the air over it. I just have a bit slight issue with a guy missing weight, getting his pay cut, getting taken out of the interim title end game scenario to then turn around and, oh, well, you won you blew weight, you couldn't win the interim belt, but we're going to give you a title shot anyway.
Yeah, but then where do you go with it? You just give Rocco, who just got knocked, you know, insert rush hour, you just got knocked. I mean, that was a bad punch to the face.
Yeah. I mean, I could see it going a couple ways. I think if you did give Romero the shot, you could say, well, is the interim belt really the belt? And you could say, well, no, because, you know, Whitaker is the champ and he's just out on injury. If you do, okay, you can kind of just consider this, what, the number one contender belt. And then if you want to say about the weight issue, should it be rewarded? You can argue. I mean, because he did win the fight. I mean, at the end of the day, he went in there and he won. Cleanly, no judges, murky decision, straight up won. However, you can say, well, if he missed weight, should it be rewarded? Now, it's not like he showed up 8 pounds overweight or something absurd like that. Like we've seen, we've seen other fighters have that happen.
It was funny too, because actually, after Pat and I were talking about it at work, we were walking down the hallway, and I was like, if you saw him, I don't think he could have even lost 2.5 pounds. I mean, he was cut.
He was shredded as much as I've ever seen him.
If he wanted to lose weight at that point, because I saw some photos of him at the weigh-in, if he really wanted to lose two pounds, he would have had to cut the physical muscle or fat off of his skin.
Yeah. I mean, like this is not a joke. Like, if you looked at him at weigh-in day, I mean, he was cut. I mean, like his body fat is about as close to zero as I've ever seen on a human. I mean, that was low. So for him to cut 2.5 pounds in a 2-hour period, which he had to make the fight, like you said, you would have had to have cut something off. Literally, you'd have to have cut a body piece off of his body.
Yeah,
and just to make weight, because he was so cut.
And it's not like he's been known to miss weight ever. I think this is to my recollection, this is the first time he's ever missed.
I'm saying, for all we know, this is just he took one too many drinks out of a glass of water.
I mean, who knows? I mean, it's one of those weird things. I could definitely be okay if he gets rewarded the shot against Whitaker. If he's healthy enough, there was a little confusion if he did suffer a broken leg. In fact, if you even watched the weigh-ins, and I've seen this on a few different other sites as well, it did look like he was limping at the weigh-ins. And I just kind of maybe brushed it past. I didn't really think too much about it. But if he was taking leg shots from Rockhold during that fight, and if you're getting hit by him in the leg, yeah, I could definitely see it getting broke. So now, if he's broken and can't do the fight, who's the next contender? Any thoughts from the panel?
Lord, I'd have to look up who even the rankings are.
I think in my unofficial rankings on the ODPH, I think you have to give the shot to Chris Weidman. I think that would make the most sense. You could give it to Jacare as well. I don't know if you give it to Kelvin Gastelum just yet, even though he has been winning fights. But I think what I would do is I would give Weidman the shot if Romero can't go, and I would have Gastelum fight Jacare. Well, the winner of that gets the next title shot.
I'm looking at the UFC.com fighter rankings for middleweight. Of course, champion Robert Whittaker, number one, Yoel Romero. Number two, Ronaldo Souza.
That's Jacare.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, I think I'd have to go with you with your idea there.
I just think it makes the most sense. I mean, Weidman is definitely a former champion, had a very impressive run as champion. And I think it makes the most sense if you need to have a substitute fighter. I mean, obviously injuries happen, and you know what? If Romero can't go, it makes the most sense to me to do that. But I could definitely see him giving it to Jacare. I could definitely see him giving it to Kelvin, too. I just would put those two in the same fight against each other and to make that the number one contender.
Before we even get that far, how much farther or how much longer is Whitaker even out before he can defend the belt?
See, I'm not sure about that because I've heard conflicting.
I've heard it's been a little murky, at what point will they end up just pulling it, making the belt, and then when he comes back, obviously he gets title fight against whoever. Why don't you just do that instead?
See, that's a good question, too.
You just pull, you know, you take him off the belt, but he gets automatic rematch once he's back up. Because like you said, I mean, they've got conflicting stories. It could be another 2 months. It could be another 6 months, depending on how long he's getting out. Why don't you just take the belt? And like you said, it's, you know, you are the champion, and then you just get Whitaker comes back. He's holding a belt for, you know, UFC whatever, 226 or whatever. He is able to come back. There's your headline, and he gets automatic rematch.
Yeah, I think they should do that, but I don't, you know, sometimes they get funny about that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, like, you know, do the McGregor thing where he's blatantly just not fighting. But I'm just, you know, you just take it from him so you don't log jam the division. You have a new champion. And then you can just, when he comes back and he's 100%, he gets automatic first crack at the defense of the belt.
Yeah, I mean, I think they should do that. I mean, I don't know, but the fight game is always kind of a weird one when they go into, like, bookings and rankings, as we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
So it's hard to say. I think they should do that. Will they do that? It depends.
Well, and plus, how many times have we seen, not just in fighting, but in sports overall, you get a guy gets injured, you get told, oh, yeah, you're out, you know, 6 to 9 months, and whoops, they're back in five.
Yeah, it's something crazy happens if they come back healthier first time. Sometimes they get a fight back, and then they want to, you know, get an immediate rematch. You know, it all depends on what happens. I mean, I think I'm okay with that scenario as well. It just depends on really what the temp in the room is at the time. Because you got a lot of contenders now at middleweight that are trying to make claim, and it's just which one do you think should get it? I think there's a plethora of people that could.
This is interesting.
What's that, Pat?
A little bit interesting as we record, checking the phone, checking the news. Throughout this fight possibility, a certain fighter is calling out Luke Rockhold. And I won't ask you to guess who because I don't think you'll ever guess it. Alexander Gustafsson is calling out Luke Rockhold on Instagram. To quote him from his Instagram page, which you can find at Alex the Mauler, he says, at Luke Rockhold, your teammate is holding my division hostage, and you think there are only easy fights at light heavyweight. If you think Romero hits hard, then wait till you come to the big boys. I want DC, and knocking you out will keep me warm in the meantime. Beware of coming up in weight, because I will be standing at the front door waiting.
That is an amazing fight, and I want to see that.
I kind of want to see it, too.
Well, there was rumor that Rockhold was talking about moving up to 205 at the end of this.
It'd be a shot in the arm of that division.
Well, it definitely would be. I think they definitely need some new fighters up there that are really going to take hold of the spotlight. And Rockhold is one of those guys. He has all the potential in the world. Can he cash in at 205? I think he could make a good run for it. Him against Gustafsson, that is a fight to happen.
Well, that needs to happen.
Yeah, that, I mean, definitely does. I mean, especially if DC goes up to heavyweight wins, and like, let's say if he beats Miocic there, he said he's going to come back to 205. Now, do I see him fighting Rockhold? Maybe, but I don't think right away.
Yeah.
So there is that as well. And, I mean, the UFC has got a lot on their plates. I mean, they got a couple good fight cards coming up. UFC 222 is coming in March with Cyborg versus Yana Kustikana. I hope I pronounced that right. If I didn't, I do apologize. For the featherweight title in the women's division, I know that that's going to be a definite one. And then just recently, I don't believe we've spoken on air about this one, with Max Holloway getting injured, Frankie Edgar now has a new opponent in Brian T-City Ortega.
I saw that.
That is a fight to see. I can't wait for that. I know Frankie is not the type of guy to wait around for fights.
Nope.
So when they made this one, I fully expected this. And this is, I will say this, if Ortega wins, you got to put him in a title shot.
I'd say so.
If he wins, he's currently 13-0. If he beats Frankie, I don't see any reason you can't give him a title shot against Holloway when Holloway gets healthy. If Frankie wins, obviously he keeps his contendership and he gets Holloway as soon as Holloway's cleared to go. Either way, we're in for a good fight that night.
We win.
We win.
Yeah. Moving forward, we win.
Ortega is definitely on the rise, and he's the scariest guy to fight in the third round. I forget his record of finishes in the third round, but I know it's a UFC record. And obviously, if he gets in there and goes completely, you know, in for the win and can pull it off, I mean, the sky is the limit for this kid. And if Frankie does it, it's Frankie still proving that he's, you know, one of the top people in the division. And he's worthy of the title shot. Which, I mean, he already is, but this is just another name on the resume. Either way, I mean, we're in for a win for both fights on that card. And then even looking into, I know JR's one he has circled on his calendar, UFC 223, with the man, the myth, the legend, Khabib.
How many fights has he lost?
Zero.
Boom. That is the scariest man to fight right now.
Assuming he doesn't get hurt.
I mean, he's legitimately scary. I mean, let's reflect back, not to his last fight, but to the fight before. With a broken right hand, he won via knockout with the right hand that was broken.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
With repeated punches to the face.
Yeah.
Just saying. That's a pretty scary dude.
I'm just saying, him and Ferguson, it's going to get bad. It's going to get nasty. It's going to be one of those fights that's knockdown, drag out, everybody hide. Because either way, you're going to have a definitive lightweight champion. I think Connor has been stripped if he has not been made official.
They haven't said anything official.
No, but they keep saying this is for the lightweight title. That's the closest I've gotten to it. So the way I personally am interpreting this, that Connor's belt is null and void at this moment.
So I think they're trying to do that without, you know, ticking Connor off.
No, but at the same time, you can't have a fighter that hasn't defended his belt in how long now?
Oh, give me a minute.
Year and a half.
Yeah.
Longer than that.
I mean, if you haven't done that, and it's almost by choice, let's be honest about it. It is by choice, pretty much, because he chose to fight Mayweather instead. And I'm not even addressing that nonsense.
Rematch!
Of Mayweather coming to the UFC and fighting in the UFC, because I will save you a click. Or I'll save you the money, however you want to define it. Just watch James Toney versus Randy Couture. Enough said.
I'm just thinking, going back, you know what? I know we're overseeing 223, but with the Khabib thing, just real quick. Mm-hmm. When he wins, which will be amazing, I hope we get to see Conor come back, because I tell you what, Conor and Khabib.
That fight needs to happen.
Like, we're like almost foaming at the mouth. Like, oh, come on, baby. Like, that fight would be epic.
458 days since Conor McGregor last defended his belt.
I'm sorry, his belt's null and void in my eyes.
Oh, mine too.
And there's nothing against Conor as a fighter.
He's a great fighter. He's a great trash talker. He obviously brings money and fans to the sport. But when you go for 2+ years, or, you know, a year and a half, going on 2 years, without defending your belt, sorry, you lose.
Well, you know, he's made it very clear he wants to fight for a lot of money. And he is, because of the Mayweather fight. So that's where you're almost pulling for Khabib, because you know you're going to get so much pull in this fight for money that you may entice Conor to come back, fight the weight class, because you know you're going to get paid. Let's think about it. I mean, we've already saved the date in April for the Khabib fight as it is. So if he wins and you know he'll call out McGregor, to defend the, you know, he'll be like, my next fight's Conor. That's who I want to fight. That's a lot of money, and Gregor's got a lot of pull there. So then you may see him come back.
I think
for a fight like that.
Well, I think you will, and I think that's what he wants. And you know what? He deserves to get it. He is the biggest draw in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd almost give him who you want to fight. But at the same token, if you're going to be champion, and you're going to be in a specific weight class, you need to fight the people in that weight class. Now, if he decided to say, you know what, everybody knows I'm the champ and can give you a whole entertaining spiel. Okay, great. But my point is, if you're going to do that, you shouldn't have a belt. And you know what? Just say, all right, this is the guy I want to fight, and let me fight. And then just make it non-title, make it a 5-round. If he's the better guy, everybody knows he won. Makes the most sense to me.
It's about, to me, for Conor and kind of the mindset and the mentality he goes through fighting right now, that makes far more sense than log jamming an entire division for 458 days because you want the money.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely understand he does. And if he wants to fight Diaz that bad, honestly.
McGregor Diaz 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to do that trilogy again, but I mean, why?
You'd watch it.
I would watch it because I watch a lot of MMA. I watch most everything I can watch. But my point is, I'm not excited for it. I'm not, like, I'm more excited for Khabib Ferguson and Edgar Ortega than I am for that fight happening.
Yeah, the fire that would be McGregor versus Diaz is not even embers at this point. They've missed the you know, striking point for doing that third fight.
I mean, personally, I'd like to see Conor fight Nick, not Diaz.
Oh, Lord.
That's the fight. If you want me to get amped up about him fighting,
oh, no.
That's the fight I want to see. I want to see Nick fight him.
I kind of want to see that now, too.
You know, they can fight at 170. Or Nick, I mean, I don't know if he wants to drop to 155. I don't think he would.
Nick
can
tell him, fight at whatever weight class you want. I'll be there.
Yeah, that's the fight. If you want to see a real fight. Now I'm not saying Nate is not going to do it, because Nate fought every fight. But we've already seen it. I don't think we need a trilogy there. I mean, me personally. But I'd still watch it. And I'd still tell you, I think.
Revenge for his brother.
I'm just telling you. I think
it writes itself.
I think if Nick came back, that's the fight you make. Me personally, let us know what you think. We talked a lot of UFC. Who do you think should be the next one for Robert Whittaker at the middleweight division? Let us know. Hit us up on the hashtag ODPH. We're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back. It's a heartbreak soul shape radio time. Take it four steps forward, no steps back.
Hey, this is Vince, the Common Man Ciatoli, local MMA fighter, telling you to keep on listening to the ODPH, the 607's up-and-coming newest podcast.
Talking some Major League Baseball in this week's ODPH, and a very big free agent move happened in Chicago. Pad, you got the details?
Oh boy, did it ever. Yu Darvish signed a 6-year, $126 million contract with the Cubbies.
Wow.
Lord have mercy. Now, the contract does include a player opt-out after 2019 and some minor incentives, just Cy Young base, but nothing else beyond that. What are your thoughts on this contract deal?
Don't care. He didn't really do much in the World Series, so he lost his last three starts as a Ranger before becoming a Dodger. He pitched all of three whole innings in the World Series over a course of two games. Overpay much? Question mark?
Yes, because I'm looking at the contract as it stands. He is currently 31 years old, and the contract runs through the 2023 season where he will be 36.
And there's no team option. It's only a player one, correct?
It's a player opt-out. Yep.
See, I guess I look at this twofold. One, is he expected to be the ace of the Cubs?
I would say no.
No, you still have Lester as your
right.
ace.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
He's your number two.
He's your number two. Is it a little pricey?
Yeah.
In my opinion, yes. I agree. I think it is. But I don't think it's a bad move per se. Cubs?
At least you know you have to bench him in the postseason.
Well,
so, I mean, he'll get you your wins in the regular season, right. But he's no good come postseason time.
Well, I say his postseason record is not the best.
He pitched three innings over two games.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's not
three.
The best. It's not the best, and that's why I said. But for him, the Cubs are already kind of playoff tested, obviously winning the World Series a couple seasons ago. And is the expectations that high for him? No. I mean, as a Yankee fan, I'm happy that the Yanks did not sign him because I think him in that short right field would have been disastrous.
Yeah, I know we discussed it when the World Series was going on, but his numbers at home for then the Dodgers were awful. Just awful. Yankee Stadium, home run hitter park.
Yeah. Chicago is slightly better in that aspect for pitchers.
I'd say it's probably middle ground. It's not a hitter's park, but it's not a pitcher's
park. Yeah, it's midway, but it's a little more advantageous to him.
Yeah.
But I think, though, the expectations are not huge on him to deliver in Chicago, per se.
Right.
As he's not coming in to look to be the ace or really be the solid number two. I'm kind of very torn. Like, I think that it's not a crazy move, but I think it's kind of...
It helps out Chicago, that's
it helps
for sure.
Them,
I'm looking at their depth chart on the Chicago Cubs website. Of course, John Lester is listed number one. He's their ace. He's their go-to guy. He's going to be their opening day, not throwing a pickoff attempt at first base until June.
Right.
Listed number two is Yu Darvish. And then you've got Kyle Hendricks listed, and from there you've got the rest of the rotation. So the rest of the rotation, outside of John Lester, it's John Lester. He's going to show up. He's going to do John Lester things. You know, Yu Darvish certainly helps him out and bolsters that starting rotation.
Yeah, I agree. I think it definitely helps him. I don't think it hurts him in that, you know, in that aspect. But like I say, I think it's an okay move. I mean, I don't think it's definitely lock him up for the World Series.
No.
By any means. But, you know, as we said, I think Hendricks being your number two, and at least in my opinion, he should be the number two. That makes a little more sense. And with Darvish, yeah, I mean, the expectations are a little lower. I mean, it's a little more pricey, yeah, but I think the Cubs at that point, obviously, with Arrieta not being signed, they needed to do something to really shore up their rotation.
Oh, yeah.
So, that being said, not the best move, but not the worst move by any means.
I think $126 million looks a heck of a lot better in Arrieta's checkbook than it does in Darvish's.
This is true.
If you're a Cubs fan. I mean, you might be excited for Yu Darvish coming, I guess, but... I mean, Arrieta's proven. I don't know how you let him go. I mean, I'm sure that price tag's probably a little bit steeper.
I'll say I'm no Cubs fan,
than Yu Darvish's.
I'm no Cubs fan, but I think if I was, I'd be a little okay.
You're like,
we'll see how this goes.
Right. You're on eggshells. You're like, okay. if he surprises you, then it's worth it. If not, then you're going, man, we probably should have signed Arrieta. But again, Arrieta's price tag might be a little bit higher, and quite frankly, should be, than Yu Darvish's.
Yeah.
And with that being said, you know, the Cubs got a very high ceiling for the Central there in the NL, but it's going to be a dogfight nevertheless. I mean, baseball coming right around the corner, pitchers and catchers starting when?
Today.
Stoked. Baseball, baby.
Yep.
Timothy Richard is coming.
We're not going to get in that garbage.
No, but pitchers and catchers, you said, started today?
Yankees reported today as we record. The Mets, I know, reported yesterday as we record.
Of course we did.
It's my aunt's favorite time
of
year.
Of course we did. That's right.
So now, I mean, obviously the teams are getting in place, and if there's any free agents left out there, better start getting with the team ASAP because the season is coming, and it's coming fast.
So excited, baby. Baseball is right here. Mets season. Always excited for game one because who has the best opening day record in baseball at home?
Usually the Mets.
Yes. So that's the only game I like to watch because we're guaranteed a win, and then the rest of the season kind of a wishy-washy. But it's okay. But that's what I always like because you always start the season off great. Big W. If we do lose, then you know it's like, oh, boy.
They don't give you chips in April. They give you chips in October.
Hey, it doesn't matter.
I'm just saying. But it's going to be a fun season nevertheless to watch, and obviously we're going to be covering that more intently as the season progresses. Free agency is coming to an end, and you know what? Let's play ball. Easiest way to put it. Let us know what your thoughts are on the Darvish deal. Was it a good one? Was it a bad one? We want to know. Hashtag ODPH. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to close out with the local minute. Be right back. We're now on iTunes. That's right. The Ocho Duro Parlay Hour is now on iTunes. So download, rate, and subscribe. Spread the word, and thank you for listening to the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour.
I'm the street light guiding you home. Avoid the wrong step into dark.
And coming back to close out this week's edition of the ODPH, and make sure to hit us up on the social media. Pad, you got some Olympics to talk about?
Yeah, I'm going to cover a little bit of Olympics here as they're going on over in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Overall medal count, Norway is in first with 11. Canada and Netherlands are tied for second with 10. Germany is behind them with 9, following up with the United States of America with 6. Overall gold, Germany is in first with 5, Netherlands with 4, Norway's got 3, Canada and United States also with 3. Of course, of note, we got to talk about the young American snowboarder Chloe Kim, 17 years old, gold medaled in snowboarding the other night, all while tweeting from her phone while she was competing.
That is impressive.
Yeah, for those who don't know, she was in the qualifying rounds, I believe it was, and she tweeted, "Could really go for some ice cream right now," to which somebody replied, "Aren't you competing right now?" And she replied to that person, "Yeah." And then while she was going for gold last night, she tweeted about how she didn't finish her breakfast sandwich for breakfast that morning, and she really wished she had because she was, quote, hangry.
Hmm. Well, hey, you got a little, you know, fun to the Olympics there.
Oh, you do. And then the ceiling is very high. He's, of course, 17 years old. Got a lot of time left for getting some more medals.
Absolutely. So you can't go wrong with that. And going into the local minute, and I got to break down something first and foremost. Shout out to them Binghamton Bulldogs.
Ooh.
As we're going to close out the show, I want to break down about, I was at the game with Daniel John from the Rolling Them Dice blog, excuse me, and dare I say, that place was rocking. If you have not been to a Bulldogs game, I highly recommend you get there, and you get there rather quickly, because the team is playing lights-out basketball. They were winners 164-145 against Pottstown. They are on a 14-game winning streak. That's right. 14 games in a row, they have came, they have saw, and they have conquered whoever they have faced in the ABA. They are currently 6th rank as the last bracket I have read. Kyrie Sutton had an ABA career high 52, and Jimmy Gray also hit for 46 career highs.
Woo!
And I will say this, if you want to go to a fun atmosphere where the game is definitely high energy, crowd is into it, this is where you go. Sutton and Gray have been putting on a display all season long. And if you haven't seen the YouTube videos where I know the backboard got shattered, that was Mr. Sutton.
Okay.
he definitely dominated Pottstown in the paint. It wasn't even close. Like, he would come down with every single ball, and he'd go right up, and he was dunking left and right. Jimmy Gray was hitting every single three I think I've seen him throw up from wherever he was on the floor.
Lights out.
It was lights out. And the whole crowd was interactive the whole time there. It definitely was worthwhile. I know that we were actually Daniel and I were talking with actually Coach Dempsey from the Binghamton University basketball team. He was there in front of us, so shout out to him and his crew there. So we were actually just, you know, completely giving props to the Bulldogs. They were playing at such a high level. You understand why they were winning 14 in a row. And to win 14 in a row at any level is impressive.
Yeah.
And they're not just winning by 2 points. They're winning by a good margin.
And this ain't like they're playing back-to-backs, you know, every other night.
Yeah. I mean, I know that they played back-to-back when they went to Jersey and they won 113 to 108 the night before, and they come home to Seton and win 164-145. I mean, they're definitely putting up some points. They're definitely making a run. I know that they have a couple more home games left. If you are in the Binghamton area, you need to get to the game, get some merch, support the team, because, hey, they are doing big things in the small town of the 607. You definitely should go check them out. The next home game is the 17th. They're home against the Elmira Eagles, and they're home the 24th against the Scranton Shamrocks, which we'll be talking about. I hope I can get back down to some games. Definitely, if you have the opportunity, do it. BinghamtonBulldogs.com. Hit them up on their Facebook as well. They're doing big things. And need I say more?
Nah, I think we hit the nail on the head.
I think I hit it because I'm trying to really contain how amped I was at the game. And like I said, Sutton and Gray were putting on a show. Dare I say. I mean, Pottstown was hanging in there. But when they got rolling in the second quarter, it was just you knew the tempo was shifting in the room.
It was like watching a guy play NBA 2K who knew what he was doing.
Pretty much. I mean, they were hanging in there, but just Sutton was just dominating the paint. And that's pretty much all you can do. And like I said, Gray was hitting shots all over the gym. And it didn't matter like what he was throwing up. It was just swish, swish, swish.
Oh, impressive.
Absolutely. So shout out to those Bulldogs. And speaking of some more local news, JR has some news to break.
Oh, yeah, baby. Well, in the spirit of baseball, as we have discussed, I am a big Mets fan. Here in the 607, we do have a Mets affiliate.
Damn right we do.
Yes. So the Rumble Ponies, actually, they have released their schedule. They are opening here April 5th, Thursday, I should say, April 5th, against the Portland Sea Dogs. If, in case you don't know, that is the Boston Red Sox affiliate. No big deal, but they'll be playing, which means we're less than 2 months away from baseball, baby. Right here in the 607. Super awesome. Ready to go check them out. It's going
to
be great.
All right. So now you have officially heard it. JR is ready to go to Rumble Stadium.
It's baseball. I'm ready to go. Let's go. I'm going
to
go.
He's coming to the stadium. Shout out to the Rumble Ponies, too, because last season was tremendously fun, if I can use that word. I mean, I had not gone down to the stadium for a while. I'm a Yankees fan, true and true, but you know what? I am on the Rumble Ponies bandwagon.
And it's amazing because we actually get blessed with a 7-game homestand right off the start. So beautiful, beautiful weekend for baseball. It's going to be awesome.
Assuming we don't get dumped with some weather because, you know, April weather.
Yes.
It could happen, but you know what? As long as you got the chance to get down to the stadium, go check it out because, I mean, I'm sure they probably have done more work on the stadium. And last season, like I said but in previous shows time and time again, they have done so much to that stadium that it doesn't feel like a baseball game. It feels like an experience.
I know. I was going to say, even if you recall a couple shows ago, Pad broke the news, the $175,000 donation to the stadium. Beautiful story he did on that. So, I mean, we've got baseball coming right around the corner, right here in the 607. As a Mets fan, stoked.
Absolutely. Stoked. Absolutely. So definitely check it out. And for the sound guy galore, JR, the intern himself, Padawan J, I am your host, Ken M. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour. We'll see you next time.
Instead of making promises in the dark, why don't we just play our part? Because I'm all alone in your, and you're all alone tonight. Act like lovers, but we're not even friends.
I hit.